Thank you, Herb. I appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you all today. And I couldn't have had a better introduction, both from Herb and from our previous speakers here, and Sean and Bob and Kent, because they've really set the stage for some of the things that I want to talk about today. And And what I want to address is this component of new trait development. Like Bob introduced to start with the use of genomic technologies and the DNA information, it's going to open up a whole new set of traits that we might be able to evaluate. And what I want to talk about today is how we prioritize that, how we choose traits that are going to make you as seed stock producers and commercial producers more profitable. So I'm going to lay out a framework that I think we should use as we look at the new traits we might want to develop, the resources we're going to spend and use to develop the evaluations for those traits and help us to become more profitable. And that's the end goal. How can we use genetic improvement to become more profitable? I've got Dr. Cruz on here as a co-author because we've spent a considerable amount of time discussing some of these concepts and wanted to give him due credit for his contribution to this talk. The previous speakers have alluded and described the changing beef production environment we're in. Kent talked about some of the World Animal Health Organization statistics, wherein 2020, I think it was, we're going to have double the protein need from a food standpoint in the world. The United Nations Secretary General, a couple weeks ago said we're going to need about a 50% increase in food by 2030. Okay. So 50% increase in the amount of food we produce. Yet if you look at the North American cow numbers, we're continually on a downward trend. I took those stats from the USDA and Alberta Ag, Agricultural and Rural Development Statistics. Downward trend. Now you might think, well, that at least bodes well because if there's fewer cows, we may get better prices for our beef. Okay, so there is some positives of that. But we're still in a challenging environment. Looking back to the U.S., fuel prices. In the month of May, over 28 days, we set 27 new record highs for the price of gasoline. Okay? The cost to raise a calf, and Kent showed the graph that I pulled this from, have risen 56% in the last 3 years. That's the cost to raise a calf from birth all the way through the feedlot stage. 56% increase. And if you look at some of the other predictions that are out there, I pulled this one from the Doan Advisory Services that came out, I think, a month ago. Okay, and they assumed in their predictions that oil would go from $67 to $94 by 2020. Well, where are we at now? Or what, $142 a barrel of oil? Or is it higher than that? I haven't checked lately, but we're well above that. And even with that assumption, the production costs for corn were going to go up 26%, barley was going to go up 25%, and soybeans were going to increase 32%. So our cost of production are rising. We're in a changing environment from the standpoint of the economics of production. We have a whole host of new tools that are becoming available to us to make genetic improvement. Okay? So how are we going to use those to help us to maintain more profitability, become more profitable? I mean, there's a whole host of things, and what I want to focus on today is that genetic improvement aspect. Obviously, there are management changes we can implement. We can look at value-added products, and I think that has a lot of merit, and Dr. Smith and others yesterday spoke about some of those. But our challenge, okay, as given to us by Dr. Pollack, is how do we transition from today to someday? Okay? We've got to look forward, and that's what I want to do, is hopefully set a framework through which we can choose those traits and focus our efforts into genetic improvement that's going to help us become more profitable. Okay, from a genetic standpoint, and from my perspective, all of the easy stuff's been done. Okay? The low-hanging fruit's been harvested. We have birth weight EPDs. We have weaning weight EPDs. We have yearling weight, milk, total maternal, scrotal circumference. Most of those EPDs focusing on the output or the income traits. Okay? There's a lot of information that's already out there. In some instances, we have EPDs and selection tools for both the economically relevant traits and the indicator traits. But I would propose to you that as we move forward, we need to develop tools that don't increase the confusion. I think Bob asked the question, how many of you ever explained an EPD to a commercial producer and had a good outcome or a comfortable outcome? We don't want to increase confusion. We want to continue to make this as easy as possible, develop tools that are going to help our commercial customers become more profitable. We don't want to increase the difficulty of making a good selection decision. Okay. So some terminology. And Bruce Golden and Dorian Garrick and myself and Scott Newman originally introduced this technology, I think it was in the Wichita BIF meetings back in 2000 or 2001. But essentially, I'm going to use this throughout. I'm not sure if that's going to show up very well, but economically relevant traits are traits that are directly associated with a revenue stream or a cost of production for the commercial producer. Okay? And I borrowed a quote here from Dave Nichols, and I liked that quote. It said, those who ignore their customer, I think he termed it as doomed to the trash can of history. Okay? And I took that quote from him yesterday. So we want to focus on the commercial production system, okay? And we want to think about indicator traits, those traits that are going to add accuracy to the EPDs for our economically relevant traits. And they're important. I'm not saying indicator trait development is not important because it adds accuracy to our EPDs for those traits that make a difference to your profitability, okay? Make a difference to your profitability. And we do that through the genetic relationships, right? The genetic correlation. That's why we get ultrasound data. Because it's genetically correlated to the way bull's progeny are going to grade on the rail. Right? It's genetically related to those. Okay, so determining the economically relevant traits, and I think this is the framework we need to use to help us identify the traits we want to address in the future. The question I'd ask you, for you, those of you who raised your hand and were commercial producers, is does selecting on a trait directly in affect your income or your cost of production? If you could say, all right, if I change that trait one unit across my herd, that's going to influence my income or my cost, you can say that's an economically relevant trait. Okay, and then I've already alluded to the fact that those of you in the audience that are seed stock producers, okay, you need to focus on the needs of your customer. Okay? Needs of your customer. Now, why the distinction between the economically relevant traits and the indicators? Because trying to select for both is counterproductive. Okay. And I'll explain that at one level from the standpoint that the more traits you select for, okay, the less selection pressure you have on any one of those traits, and the slower progress you have in any one of those traits. Now, I hesitated to put this out because that's not an endorsement of single trait selection. Okay? Not an endorsement of single trait. We can make a lot of progress if we select on one trait, but what do we do? We ignore everything else, we're probably going to screw up our cow herd, the performance, and other traits. This is a system focus. Okay? The concept, as I've presented here, helps us focus our selection efforts. Okay? If you think about calves that are, you know, a bull, two bulls that sire calves that are 90 pounds or, what is that, 41 kilograms. Okay? And one bull's calves, 90 pounds, 41 kg, you haven't assisted a single one of the those calves being born, even if he was bred to heifers. The other one, he averages 90 pounds, okay, but you've assisted 20% of those. Right? There are differences in calving ease, okay, that are not explained by birth weight. Differences in shape. Okay? And from a cost of production, from an animal survival standpoint, you want to focus on the calving ease. Because realistically, a 60-pound calf or a 90-pound calf, typically, the 90-pound calf, if it's born unassisted, is going to be way heavier, okay, than the 60-pound calf, even if it's born unassisted. We need to focus on the calving ease. So we've got an indicator trait and an economically relevant trait. Our EPDs, the EPDs we produce, already account for birth weight. They're done in multiple trait models. So we've already accounted for that. So the need to select on both of those reduces your intensity, if you do that, and decreases the amount of progress you make in calving ease, the rate of progress. So the guiding principle I would propose to you for new trait development is that we identify the economically relevant traits. Okay, and I'll talk about these a little bit more. We've got a lot of those already done. There's problems with some of them we do have done, okay, that have been completed and they're delivered to the industry. You know, we've got all of our sale weight EPDs, the weaning, the yearling, the carcass, milk production, because that influences how heavy the calves are. Weaning, we got mature size. You might say, well, sale weight, mature size, typically we use mature weight as an indicator of maintenance requirements for the cow, but remember you're selling cull cows. Those sales are typically on a weight basis, so there's income associated with your production. You know, we've got Other income traits that are related to reproduction, I'll talk about these later on, heifer pregnancy and length of productive life or stayability. We've got calving ease, which could be a cost, well, it is a cost trait as well. And then we've got some bull fertility and differences. Okay, Kent alluded to those, I think it was early on. You know, differences in the ability of a bull to service cows and produce pregnancies. We've got the end product traits, okay, the quality, the nutrient content, all related to income. Then we've got those traits related to cost of production. Okay, this is from my perspective, some of the economically relevant traits. Cow feed requirements or maintenance energy. Feed requirements for the growing animals, in the backgrounding phase, in the feedlot phase. We've got the reproductive traits. As we get more fertility, we have to keep fewer heifers back. So that is related to the cost of developing those heifers. And then, of course, we've got health and survival traits. Okay? So as we use that framework, we've got to remember that genetic improvement is long-term. Okay? You've got to look 20-plus years ahead. And that's the challenge I would echo along with John Pollock. We've got to look to someday. How do we get to someday? Okay? Because if you think about it, Don, are all your cows bred? He hopes. All right? Well, those mating decisions he made this year in 2008, those calves, let's look at the timeline. Those calves are going to be born in 2009. Okay? He's going to sell yearling bulls. I'm assuming you sell yearling bulls, right? In 2010. And the customer's going to use those in 2010. Okay? And when he uses those in 2010, he gets his first calves in 2011. Okay? So he might sell wieners, get some income on those bulls that Don bred in 2011. Okay? But if he retains ownership, they're probably going to be harvested in 2012. If he keeps his own replacement females out of his herd, those daughters are going to be bred in 2012, calve the first time in 2013, okay, so we're already 5 years out. And if he keeps those daughters and they have a good lifespan, add 10 years, add 12 years. We're looking at 2025. So long-term, the decisions you guys made as seed stock breeders are going to have long-term implications for your customers. Okay? So as we look to the future and how we're going to use some of these genomic technologies and how we're going to develop these new traits, we've got to think about this from the standpoint that this is a long-term proposition. Now, the good part is the results are sustainable. Okay? And that's easy to think about. Go to any of your breed associations and look at the genetic trends. Okay? Look for weaning weight or birth weight. The trends are long-term and sustainable. Okay? We haven't made one selection decision and then lost everything the next year. It's not like an implant. We stick an implant in a steer's ear. That animal's harvested. That benefit's gone. We have to redo it again next year. But our genetic trends show us that this is sustainable. Okay, so another consideration as we develop these is accuracy. Okay, and as we develop new traits, we got to consider the accuracy benefits, some of the problems associated with that. And we've already got EPDs that we have accuracy problems with. Okay, the two key ones that I hear a lot about, okay, are heifer pregnancy and stayability. Okay, if you think about the time to get an observation on a bull's progeny for heifer pregnancy, okay, likely 4 years of age. That bull's 4 years old before you ever get an observation on his daughter. Stayability is even worse. And I hear this continuously from some of the breed associations we work with that the bull's dead before we get any accuracy on that stayability EPD. And we're working on methods to improve that, but it's a problem. Typically, you don't get an observation until they're 8 years old if you use the definition of stayability as stayability to 6 years of age. Okay? Cow feed requirements or maintenance energy, that's another one. Most of the way we evaluate feed requirements for cows is based on mature size and milk production. Okay? It's really not a trait that is easily measurable. Okay? And why am I emphasizing accuracy? Because if you look at the components that influence how fast we make genetic progress, and I go through this with my animal breeding class at the junior level when they come and take the course at CSU. We talk about the four factors and the factors you have a lot of control over. Genetic variability, which typically you don't have a lot of control over as a breeder. Generation interval, which you have a limited control over because you've got the limited reproductive ability of the beef cow. And then the two things we do have some control over. Intensity of selection and accuracy. Okay? And accuracy, so therefore, is one of the four major contributors to how fast we can make genetic improvement. Okay? So we know we've got problems in current EPDs, and some of the future EPDs we may have problems, okay, relative to accuracy. So within the realm of the new traits, This is my perspective. Okay? And I think of BIF as the meeting of the minds, if you will. I continually learn new things and am challenged by breeders that I talk to here. You know, discussions with Larry Crosant and Larry Keenan and Dave Nichols always makes me think. I go back to CSU with new problems in mind, potential new approaches. Okay, so this is my perspective. Okay? Obviously, feed intake is an issue that we need to address. Dr. Cruz and others in this room later on today are going to discuss some of the research that's involved in that. Okay, we need to address it at the cow-calf sector. Feed costs are going up. We need to address it at the background in the feedlot sectors. Okay, and that's what I see as one of the traits we need to continue focus on. It's a pity we didn't have this done 10 years ago with corn prices going over $7 a bushel. The other one I see is health and survival traits. And again, I think some of the evaluation of this is going to be opened by some of the new genomic technologies. But if you look in the U.S. alone, okay, we lost about 1.1 million cattle, okay, in 2005 to respiratory issues. That's a lot of animals. Okay. We have a lot of potential payback if we can improve that. Same thing with the consumer acceptance traits. We've got eating quality issues. We've got nutrient content issues that some of the new technologies are going to allow us to evaluate. And then we've got the regionalized adaptability traits. And this is where I see a lot of cooperation between breeders in different areas relative to developing animals adapted, okay, to their particular environments. Okay? The big one in my part of the world is brisket disease. And Tybar Ranches and Emma Danziger, they work very hard on developing bulls and cattle that are adapted to their customers who produce in that high elevation environment. Other of us, maybe not in Canada, have heat tolerance issues. Okay? That are regionalized adaptability issues. There's a whole host of traits that I think we're going to have the ability to better evaluate in the future, and we should spend some resources on that. And then the male fertility traits. You know, some of the original work by Sue DeNeist and Allison Van Eenennaam relative to bulls in multi-sire pastures and the number of progeny they produce. Okay? I think that's going to be a natural fallout of some of the genomic technologies that we have in development. We're going to see better utilization of those, and I think that would help us relative to the impact, selecting bulls with late greater impact, provided they're genetically superior, of course, on our herd genetics. And again, we've got to think about it from the long term, 2025, right? We're going to have impacts on just the cattle that are going into production, the matings Don made this year out that far. Okay? So within the realm of new traits, these are some key areas, but I would be interested in hearing your comments relative to what are we forgetting? What can we do as geneticists to make you more profitable? What tools can we actually develop to make you more profitable? What traits haven't we considered? Okay. So how are we going to address these? And remember that a lot of these, the low-hanging fruit's gone. These are harder to evaluate, but I think the evaluation of these is going to be a lot simpler with the adoption of some of these genomic technologies. Okay? Because these have a large potential to increase our product value and potentially substantially reduce our cost of production. Okay, we're going to need to allocate resources for collection of data. And in many cases, collection of phenotypic data is going to be problematic. But I'm going to give you in the next slide, next couple of slides, an approach that I think might work for that. We got to identify new indicator traits. Again, indicator traits are going to add some accuracy to the evaluation we have for these new traits that are in development or should be worked on relative to development. And then we got to look at how can we best utilize and develop that genomic information to solve our accuracy problem, in addition to the indicator traits. You know, feed efficiency or residual feed intake is a very good example. Again, talked about it a little bit more this afternoon, but by making that uncorrelated to everything else genetically, you've lost all your indicator traits. How do we overcome that relative to accuracy? So one of the terms that I've learned in discussions with Danny and others is this term of phenomics. And that's the development and study of animal phenotypes, animal performance that we can use to elucidate information from genomics research, with ultimately the goal to develop selection tools for you as breeders. Okay? So in my mind, the evaluation of these new traits are going to require detailed collection of performance information from selected populations, okay? Especially for adaptability. We can't just have one population that's detailed measured or have detailed measurements on. We need that in different areas, different environments, determine if some of these tests work in different environments. And that's going to require collaboration from both the research facilities, okay, and industry partner populations. Okay? And we'll see, as Denny talks about in the next talk after the break, some applications or some approaches to incorporating all of this DNA information that we're collecting and how we might involve that or pull information from the commercial sector to add accuracy to our evaluations. You know, Bob did a good job outlining that. And we have a whole host of new sources of data that we can pull through into the evaluation of our seed stock just by using these DNA technologies. And then, of course, we need some improved data tracking systems. And I think that will add value to our selection programs as well. And Mark Tallman talked about that yesterday when he talked about should BIF be involved in the evaluation of commercial animals. He outlined a data tracking system that I think we need to consider to help us select animals that are make us more profitable. So, in summary, I see Herb standing up here. My purpose was to develop perspective. Say, I want you to go out from here, go to the break, as you drive home, the breeders, think about, if the sky's the limit, 2025, I could measure anything, get EPDs, what would make me more profitable? Okay. And this is a good forum to talk between the scientists and the breeders, okay? Help us direct the new traits that we should be looking at besides the ones that we've already started. Again, it shouldn't be done in isolation, and I guess that's my challenge to you all, to get more interaction and input from you as breeders. So with that, I'll end. Turn it over to you, Herb.
Thank you, Mark. Do we have any questions for Mark prior to